This is Church and State on Magnificat Radio. For the past year or so, I've resisted commentating on the so-called Benedict Option. It's a proposal by author and blogger for the American Conservative, Rod Dreher, who still must be applauded, I think, for trying to grapple with how to live as a Christian in these secular times, because essentially his theory is that we need to try to have intentional living, try to carve out a secure space for the faith. And this is not an easy thing to get through, so I wanted to turn to someone who's written about ideas present in the so-called Benedict Option, and that is Gabriel Sanchez. Gabriel's been on this show, I think, now three times. He's a good friend of the show, and I highly recommend you to go to his blog, opuspublicum.com. Gabriel, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me once again.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. And today we want to get through something that has been, it's come to the forefront of this week, especially in response to an article written on the website Ethica Politica, basically blaming the rise of Donald Trump, which is kind of an odd claim, on the Benedict Option. And so I wanted to try to clarify for our readers, our listeners rather, what this Benedict Option is, as well as, you know, what is its best arguments, what is perhaps some of its weaknesses. And I wanted to read to you, Gabriel, something I wrote on the Magnificat Radio blog this week, essentially what I've gathered to be the Benedict Option. I want you to respond and see if I've got this right. So here's what I wrote. The world around us is crumbling. Liberalism has succeeded, and it is slowly but surely making it impossible for Christians to live their faith in the public square. Take cover, gather with like-minded persons, live intentionally outside of public sight. Better to keep your integrity than mingle among the heathens, where you risk contamination and persecution. The storm will blow over soon. Is that about right? Is that about the summary of the Benedict Option?
I think that is a fair summary of the Benedict Option. I think if there's any quibble to have with it, I think Dreher might say that the storm isn't going to blow over soon. But this is sort of one of the problems with, let me back up. One of the problems with the Benedict Option, or at least what a lot of critics are saying about it, is that Dreher isn't necessarily clear, one, what's the time horizon on the Benedict Option? In other words, mm-hmm. How long do we have to wait out the storm, and when is the storm going to blow over? And I think the second, probably more powerful critique is that it seems to be calling for a sort of retreatism. In other words, that Christians, he's Eastern Orthodox, but this applies, a lot of Catholics have written about this, that basically Christians have to sort of retreat away from the world, retreat away from society because of the sort of the rampant nature of militant secularism, mm-hmm. and that, at the end of all of this, somehow Christianity, the church, however you want to define it, will be able to preserve culture and will be able to come back into society effectively and renew it. But Dreher hasn't been very specific about the mechanisms of the Benedict Option. And if you look at Ethica Politica today, Andrew Haynes, their editor, tried to defend the Benedict Option. And one of the things he tried to defend it against was the idea that it could have practical, measurable results. And I found that claim a little questionable, because if Christians do indeed withdraw from society, if they do indeed stop engaging in the public sphere, well, that's obviously going to have a measurable result. In other words, we won't have any voice left anymore. And I think that's where some people are a little skeptical of what Dreher is talking about.
Yeah, so this is something you and I have spoken about before, and that's the idea of integral Catholicism. I want to read a quote that you have provided on your blog, Opus Publicum. Blessed Pius IX and Pope Leo XIII and an entire legion of Catholic thinkers continue to fight the encroachment of liberalism within the church and in society up until the mid-20th century. These men did not sound the alarms of retreat. They dug in their heels in the ground, sometimes at great professional and personal cost. Their concern was not so much carving out a space of some quiet space, comfortable living, but their concern was to uphold the rights of Christ the King. Is that the main criticism, I guess you could say, about what has been put forth so far of the Benedict Option?
Yeah, I think that, at least from my perspective, from the perspective of integralism, that would be the main critique, that right now Catholics, and all Christians, I would argue, who are conservative or orthodox, small o orthodox, this is the time where we need to band together. This is the time where, and I don't mean that in this ecumenical way, but I mean it more in the sense of standing up for what we believe in, what we know to be true about the right order of society, about the common good, and not just take flight and head to a ghetto type of existence. And also attached to that criticism of the Benedict option is sort of a larger criticism, which is that it seems that and I don't want to slight Rod Dreher personally here, but Rod Dreher, who has been very successful as an author and as a journalist, it's easy for him to talk about having this kind of living space for himself and for his family. I think he lives in Louisiana, away from, you know, the hustle and bustle of a big city or the decays of urban life, where, you know, that's all fine and good. But at the same time, for most people living in the world right now, living in the United States, that's really not an option. That's really not a possibility for most people to be able to exercise. Right. I do want to say here, though, and this is a point I've also made elsewhere on the blog, is that if you look at traditional Catholicism, I think specifically the type of traditional Catholicism that's been supported by the Society of St. Pius X, you do see these communities of traditional Catholics mm-hmm. coming together. They're like-minded in their, not just in their beliefs, but also in their social vision, who do find a little, I don't necessarily want to call it the living space, but they find a community, sure. an authentic Christian community. Sure. And then they take what the nurturing from that community, what they learn through that community, and they bring it back out into the world. And hopefully, I think, maybe bring more, whether they're Catholics or non-Catholics, into the traditional form of Catholicism. And I think that's a very positive approach. And I think that's an approach that integralism certainly upholds.
Right. And I think it does get down at the core is, well, you know, it's not an option to teach all nations, right? It's a divine mandate. We can't just go and, well, perhaps, you know, as we know, I mean, there are clearly religious orders and monks that have a calling in life to go and live this secluded life. I don't know if that's what you're driving at. But the majority of us, yeah, we can't just get up, you know, move to some small farming community, provide for ourselves all of a sudden and, you know, live with like-minded souls. It's not an easy thing to do.
Right, right. And when I think of monastics, I often, a priest many years ago once called them the Navy SEALs of the Catholic Church. Right. And I think there's real truth to that. I mean, spiritually, they're helping to uphold the church. They're helping to, they provide a space even for lay Catholics such as you and I to, have a retreat, have a little space to sort of refresh ourselves, recharge our spiritual batteries. And that's great and that's necessary and that's part of it. But yeah, exactly like what you said. Your average person, you know, who's married, has kids. Yeah, it's great if you live in a rural area. It's great if you have that possibility for it presented to you. But for myself speaking, I'm a lawyer. I live in a semi-urban environment of Grand Rapids, Michigan. You know, I can't just sort of go out to the farm and you know, try to find some other Catholics to live in communal living with me. I just don't think that's really plausible right now.
And I think in a certain way, we're going to be I'll coin a phrase, Benedictinized by the liberal project anyway, because, I mean, you look at, you know, what's going on in South Carolina, right, where they're passing right. laws saying, you know, hey, bathrooms, we're not going to allow men going into women's bathrooms. And what has rained down upon that state by corporate, you know, titans, by the, I think, NFL, NBA said that we're going to move out our All-Star games here, in a certain sense, by having the status quo, and as some Catholics say, well, look, we just want religious freedom. Give us the right to be wrong. That is not, you know, that's going to result in pushing us into these catacombs.
I think that's true. I mean, I don't want to sound alarmist, but I think at the same time, we have to be mindful of the fact that given the direction of society right now, given the you know, what the powers that be, and by the powers that be, I mean not just the federal government, but certainly, like you pointed out, corporations and such. Yeah, we're going to be increasingly marginalized. We're going to be increasingly pushed back, and it's going to be difficult. And I don't think anybody doubts that it's going to be difficult. And earlier when you were quoting me, when I was summarizing what Catholics went through in the 19th century when they resisted liberalism, right. Well, they were marginalized. Right. It did come at great personal cost, and I think that we've become very comfortable here in the United States with the idea that the fights between liberalism and the church, that's an old fight, it's over with, the peace has been established. Mm-hmm. As long as we kind of keep our heads down and be good Americans, mm-hmm. Nothing bad will happen to us and nothing bad will happen to the church. And I think what we're seeing right now is that bad things can happen to us. It will probably get worse. I mean, God willing, it won't, but I think we have to be reasonably prepared that it will get worse. Yeah. But I think at the same time, too, just because there's a storm on the horizon, It doesn't necessarily mean, like, once again, that we just sort of flee into the caves and are never heard from again and not heard again from, right, you know, for centuries.
Because, I mean, if that is coming and, you know, and we're supposed to somehow just wait it out, I mean, how is it going to get better? I mean, we see a world awash in sin, not knowing itself to be in sin because liberalism rejects original sin. I mean, how is this going to ever be recovered unless Catholics are out there preaching the kingship of Christ, preaching, you know, the uniqueness of the one true Catholic faith and saying, look, we're not just going to plead for, you know, crumbs from our liberal overlords and saying, hey, give us religious liberty. No, we need to be out there preaching the religious truth and saying everyone needs to abide by truth. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with it 100%. It's just that at the same time, and I think you're cognizant of this, I'm sure most of your listeners are cognizant of this, it's going to be very, very difficult to do.
Sure.
And I think this is something that I apologize for forgetting the name of the priest. He was a society priest, but he once stressed the idea that, look, I mean, there's going to kind of come a time where even having a little cross on your desk is going to be, you know, mm-hmm. in the workplace is going to be, yeah, you know, not just frowned upon, yeah, but probably banned, where even speaking of religion in general, not just even Catholicism, but religion in general, will be effectively banned, or you'll find yourself ostracized, whether it's in school or the workplace. And so Catholics have to be prepared for that. But at the same time, too, just because it's going to be difficult, it doesn't give us a right to, once again, retreat, fall silent, right, hide.
Now, I know you've said something to the effect of, instead of a Benedict option or all these other options out there, how about like a St. Alphonsus option, or, you know, let's take one of these saints and say, hey, you know, we have an obligation to proclaim the church.
I wasn't being entirely tongue in cheek, but I spoke of a Ligurian option.
Ligurian, that's right.
Yes. But the sentiment behind it is completely true, sure, which is this idea that if you look at the life of St. Alphonsus and you look at the emergence of the Redemptorist order, there was a lot of spiritual impoverishment in Italy at that time, probably a lot less than we see now, but I mean, mm-hmm, certainly plenty of it. And what St. Alphonsus did is he tried to not only internally cultivate a very rich and very deep spiritual life, mm-hmm, but took that out into some of the poorest classes in society and tried to teach them not just the truths of the church, but also how to grow closer to Christ in their daily life. And the Redemptorist, at least traditionally, are very interesting because there was this monastic element to them. They, you know, they were contemplative. Mm-hmm. They kept in a monastic setting, but at the same time too, they had this missionary element to them. And I think from that model, not to say that all of us as laity can be Redemptorists, but I think what we can do is understand that, you know, we have the church, we have our families, we do hopefully can cultivate some sense of community where we live amongst other Catholics, and we use that to grow closer to Christ and to refresh ourselves spiritually. But then take those gifts, take those fruits, and bring them out into the world, bring them to the workplace. Or if you, you know, if you happen to live like both of us used to in Chicago, and you're on the train or you're on the bus, right, talk to the person next to you, ask them point blank, do you go to church? Is this something that you'd be interested in? Actually, don't frame it like, you know, it's just an interest, but say, you know, explain your faith to them as quickly as you can. And hey, 99 times out of 100 or 999 times out of 1,000, maybe nothing happens. But if just one soul, you just touch one soul and get the gears turning, or maybe soften their heart a little bit, that's one soul for Christ. And that's an amazing thing.
Yeah, I think it does come down to as well, How do we understand being in the world and not of it? Does that require us to, you know, go one direction or the other? And that's, I think, at the very heart of what I think Dreher is rightfully, and again, like I said earlier, he needs to be applauded for grappling with this, because not too many Catholics, to be quite honest, have come up with a valid way or a plausible way to deal with this. They've just continued to say, okay, we're going to fight for religious liberty, but I think he is, in a certain sense, leading the charge, and you've written about this rightfully many times because it's a really important issue.
Absolutely, and I do believe Dreher deserves praise for that, for trying to grapple with this issue. There are certainly other people who have tried as well. I think what's very disheartening for a lot of Catholics out there is that in times past, and we can certainly read about this, whether it's in books, old or modern, that recount history, we could depend upon our parish priests, our local bishops, even the popes themselves, to effectively lead the charge here to say, you know, this is the line in the sand. It cannot be crossed. And when you have the, at least in, here in the United States, the American Catholic bishops saying, you know, we're going to hold the fortnight for freedom. Right, we're going to pray religious liberty. We're going to put on, we're going to stage all these events and productions around that.
They're American.
I mean, to me, right. To me, it's just fiddling while Rome burns. Mm, that's all.
Absolutely. Oh, it is. I mean, I've commented on this show a number of times is that modern politics is, you know, it's like rearranging deck chairs in the Titanic because it's politics without God. It's sole human unaided reason trying to figure out things that are in their essence supernatural.
Oh, absolutely. And so, you know, given the situation, given the present crisis in the church, given the present crisis, the very, very damaging crisis in society right now, I mean, it is incumbent upon laity in cooperation where possible with priests and bishops to really start formulating a forceful response to what's going on, but also, of course, a forceful response that's in charity and that also leaves the door open to the church for other people to come in. It's not just a matter of pointing out the errors in society, but also saying, look, here's the pathway to truth. Here's the pathway to Christ. The one thing this society and indeed the entire world needs more than anything else is God. But the problem is that we have so few people, so few loud voices in the church right now telling people that.
Who else has written about the Benedict option or integral Catholicism that we should be checking out?
Because I'm participating in the website, I guess this is a little bit of self-promotion, but I would certainly recommend anybody out there who has real intellectual interest in this topic to check out the Josias. That's thejosias.com. It's a sort of a depository of original articles, which I've contributed, translations from theologians and popes, material that's never been put into English before, original commentaries.
Right. I just put this up on the Magnificat Radio blog if anyone's been paying attention to that. So,
right, and you have a wide variety of contributors. Pater Edmund Waldstein, who is a Cistercian monk in Austria, he writes quite a bit on these matters, and you can find his material on there. Elliot Milko, who writes now, who is an editor, I should say, for First Things, and has also written some stuff for them, he contributes. But there's a wide variety of contributors there over at the Josias, and I really think that's a good place for people to start if they have a real interest in how to, not just practically, but also theoretically, approach the problems that we see today in society and to examine them through an authentically Catholic lens.
Right. I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. Visit the Josias. Also visit Magnifica Radio's blog, where I am writing daily, as well as Gabriel's blog, opuspublicum.com, and also follow Gabriel on Twitter, @opuspublicum. Gabriel, thanks for being on again today on Church and State.
Thank you so much for having me. All right. Take care.
Thank you, Gabriel. And we'll be right back after this with our last segment today. Tyler Nethercutt gives us his last word. Stick with us.